You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I'm your host, Joe Epley, and this week we get to talk to Pastor Austin Epperson. He's hailing to us from Oklahoma. And we got to talk on the phone earlier this week, and I just really enjoyed just the different varieties of his story, the way that he sees rural, the way that he sees community, the way he talks about serving and how it serves as kind of a pastoral foundation. And so I am pumped to let him tell us all those details. But first, I just want to say, Pastor Austin, how are you today, sir?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm excited to be with you. I think it's going to be a good conversation.
Well, good. I think so, too. Let's dive into this. What we always start with is we just love to hear the story of people. And so why don't you pick a starting spot in your ministry journey and tell us where you've been, you know, how you got to where you are now, a little bit about where you're at now, and maybe you kind of how that all connects with small town church.
Absolutely. So I would say my ministry journey really started when I was about 14 years old. I grew up in Western Oklahoma, very rural area called Woodward. And I just started feeling a pull by the Holy Spirit about 14 years old to go into a full-time ministry. And it really caught me by surprise because I wouldn't have picked me to be a pastor. I don't have any sort of ministry in my family heritage or anything like that. I was just a kid at the church who loved Jesus and loved church and just started feeling that pull. And as a teenager, I just lived at church. I was one of those homeschool guys. And so I really had nothing better to do a lot other than to go to the church. And that gave me just loads of opportunities because I was always there. And so, you know, as you're growing up, you know, you get the opportunities to play the drums or play the guitar, or, you know, you get the opportunity to mow the church grass. Yeah, it's a beautiful opportunity. It is a beautiful opportunity. So that's kind of my experience as a teenager. And then I met my wife in that church and got married. And then in 2010, we accepted our first full-time ministry position in a little town outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma, as youth pastors. And we were there for almost 9 years, just a wonderful experience. Wow. Great people. Yeah. Our pastors were awesome friends to this day. The people are great, still in contact with a lot of them. And we did that for almost 9 years. And then 2019, we started to fill the pool to transition to lead pastoring. And we ended up in the best church in the world in Jay, Oklahoma. It's a very rural community. Been here, the population is about 2,400 people. It's just right in northeast Oklahoma. And we just love it. We love it. This is a great church, great community, and we just feel blessed to be here.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about Jay. What was the church like when you got there? You've been at it almost 5 years, you know. Tell us a little bit about the town, you know, just fill in the gaps for us a little bit.
Yeah. So the town itself is a very interesting. It's on Cherokee land. And so you have a very diverse group of people here. There's lakes around, so everybody's into outdoor life, you know, hunting, fishing. We have a lot of people that transplant in, particularly on the weekends, because we live the biggest lake in Oklahoma and Grand Lake. And so a lot of people from Tulsa or, you know, Northwest Arkansas will come over here on the weekends. But the church itself specifically has a long heritage going back to the 40s. Very healthy church when we got here with great people. It had a very solid board, had a very, very firm foundation of leadership, a good culture here. And so when we came, we were just able to hit the ground running, which was really beneficial for us because we got here 9 months before COVID happened. And so if the church wasn't healthy and strong, I don't really know how that would have went, but it's been good. It's been very good. And we've seen God do some amazing things since then. And he gets all the credit and all the glory. He has brought some amazing, amazing people to this church with a lot of leadership ability, a lot of talent, a lot of skill set, and they have a heart for the community. And so it's really been advantageous for us as we've tried to get into the community and just reach people for the lost. And this year alone, we've seen 43 people baptized. And so he gets all the credit. Yeah, it's just super cool. Super cool. So I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. What a flyover view. I love that. I think we're just going to dive into the story, different parts. Let's kind of start back as a teenager. I know that when We joke about it, how it's such a great opportunity to mow the church lawn. But when we were talking over the phone, you mentioned a lot how kind of this foundation of serving as a teenager kind of really impacted you and how it's kind of affected your pastoral ministry. And so, what was the main lesson from that season, and how did it really, like, tell us the practical ins and outs of why you think it's such a good foundation.
Well, I mean, Jesus said that he came not to be served, but to serve. And so I think in God's economy, serving always leads to opportunities. At 14 years old, I was doing the stuff that no one else wanted to do. Our youth met in the fellowship hall, and that was during a day and age where, it was multi-purpose room, and
Sure.
there was an adult Sunday school class in there, and they just didn't want to see the sound equipment when they were doing their Sunday school
Sure.
class. So it was becoming upon me to come in and set all that stuff up every week. And so my mom would drop me off at the church around 4 o'clock on Wednesday, and I would start to, move sound equipment and instruments and tables and chairs and game tables and all of this stuff to get set up. I was on the mowing rotation. I labored for the building campaigns when that came up, and we had to build a youth building. I mean, I was in on all that stuff, and because I was always around, I got insight into pastoral ministry because I was around the pastoral staff. And then when you're there and you're eager to do, the labor, then they'll just start giving you opportunities to preach and to lead. And I think the same thing holds true today. If you're in rural America and you want gospel opportunities in your community, then you better figure out what's important to the town fathers and then make that important to you. You don't always get to do what you want to do. You need to do what the community feels is important sometimes. So showing up at the chamber meetings, sending encouraging messages to your mayor, volunteering at community events, those serving opportunities in your town are going to open up doors of ministry and leadership for you in that small community. And so I think it all connects together. I think it's super important just to have a servant heart.
And I know even before we started this call, you were just telling me that you have, at the time of this recording, just finished up a serve week with your community. And I love what you said, because you're right. Like, we learn to serve, hopefully, as pastors. And again, when you move to a rural community, you don't get to pick which niche you fill. It's just whatever the need is. And so if you're not willing to serve, you're going to miss out on some fruitful and effective labor. And so, why don't you highlight some of the open, you mentioned the word open-ended conversations, and I love that. It seems like you approached your community, palms out, just said, "Hey, we'll do whatever. We want to meet your needs, not our agendas." And tell me what that's looked like this last week for you.
So what we do every year is we sit down and we start making a list of the nonprofits in town, or really in our county, that seem to have a very fruitful impact. Example of this is we have an advocacy group in town that does all the forensic interviews for children who've experienced abuse. We have an organization in town that does alcohol and narcotics rehab. We have organizations that feed people. I mean, you name it, your small town probably the same stuff. And so we just reach out to them and say, what do you need and how can we help facilitate that need? And it's very open-ended because sometimes churches are notorious about wanting to help in the community, but they decide what they want to do and then try to, shove that square peg in a round hole. And so with this event, we just come open-handed and say, what do you need? And that's led to some amazing opportunities. So this last week, we laid tile at NOCA, which is a rehab center here in town that men come to as a resident, and stay there and get rehabilitated. We ran a senior adult prom at the nursing home here in town, which was it's my favorite event. I think it's
Dazzling.
one
I
of the
mean, it
coolest.
just
Yeah, it's cool. And what's cool about that is there's a lot of ladies that go up there real early, and they'll go to the residents there and like help them do their hair
Oh,
and
that's
help them
so
get all
cool.
gussied up, for the night. We have people that bring in hors d'oeuvres, and we have a
I love
DJ
it.
that, there's people dancing with the residents. I mean, it's really cool, to get to do that. And then we do simple things like, handing out donuts at the drop-off line to school. And there's a group of people that goes and hands out popsicles at recess. And so, I mean, you have a wide variety of things, but it really seems to make a difference in the community because you're coming alongside people that are already working hard. And you're just saying, we see what you're doing, we see value in what you're doing, and we want to help you a little bit in that area. And it's just been, I think it's opened a lot of doors and a lot of opportunities for us.
Yeah, I would agree. And honestly, your story in itself bears a lot of witness to that foundation of serving, because again, you can't manufacture that kind of impact. You just have to show up, roll up your sleeves, and say, "Hey, we're here to help." And it's just, man, what a powerful encouragement. Let's do this. We talk about the nature of the rural church, and again, kind of using this backdrop of this, you know, exposure and opportunities that you got as a teenager. But I know that when I talked to you, you had mentioned that it feels like sometimes the rural church is not just equipped to make more pastors, because we think the church in general makes leaders. It should, you know, it should help, you know, empower people to ministry. But you said, you know, the rural church kind of seems uniquely equipped to kind of do this in some ways. And so in what ways do you think, like, rural churches are ideal places to produce pastors?
Yeah, so I think rural churches are uniquely equipped to produce pastors for two primary reasons, and that's the cultural component, and then it's the logistical component. So culturally, rural people tend to be self-starters. They're hard workers. They have multifaceted skill sets. And I think those cultural traits are very advantageous to go into the ministry. I mean, what pastor hasn't had to prepare a sermon in the morning and then fix a toilet in the afternoon?
You know? I was going to say, that is the kindest way to say you'd wear a lot of hats. Like, as a rural pastor, I'm like, man, I've learned plumbing and electrical and lawn care. And like, it's just insane. The number. I became a fireworks salesman as a rural pastor.
Yes.
Like, it's just nuts, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, continue on.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, but that's rural people, you know? I mean, if you're in the city and you have a water leak, you call a plumber. If you're in rural America and you have a water leak, you hack it together with duct tape and baling wire.
Something.
I mean, that's just the mindset. And so I don't care where you're at. I don't care if you're in rural America or in urban ministry, you're going to have to wear many different hats. And I think just growing up in a culture where you take on different projects, even if it's outside of your skill set, you figure it out. I just think that's very advantageous for producing pastors. Mm. And then just logistically, I mean, let's face it, teenagers are bored by and large in rural America because there's just not a lot to do and there's not a lot of opportunities. I mean, I'm going up to the church when I'm 14 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon because I had nothing better to do in a lot of ways. Yeah. Yes, my heart was in it, but you know, it wasn't like I was going to go to the mall or something. There was nothing else to do. And so because there was nothing else to do, church becomes the place to gather. It becomes the place to be. And so you just have the opportunities in rural church, you know. I mean, think about it this way. If you're in a mega church in an urban context and you're running, you know, 2,000 people, there's 52 Sundays a year. You know, how many opportunities are you going to get to preach? You know, if you're an 18-year-old kid wanting to go into ministry, you're just not going to get probably any, if you know, at all. In rural America, though, there's always going to be holes. And if you're willing to fill those holes, you're just going to get a wide variety of opportunities. That's me. I mean, my first time to get to preach on a Sunday, my pastor came to me right after church on Sunday morning. And he said, look, God's called you to preach, right? And I said, yes, sir. He said, well, the Bible says to be prepared in season and out of season. He said, I have to be in Oklahoma City tomorrow morning for a surgery that I got to have. And he said, there's an ice storm coming tonight and I need to get down there for this surgery.
Oh my God.
And so he said, you know, you need to preach tonight. So, I mean, there I am. Logistically, I was available. And so my first sermon was on Sunday night during an ice storm. It was myself, my mom, my dad, my youth pastor's husband, and one deacon. I mean, there was like four of us in this whole building.
Nice.
My sermon lasted for 3 minutes at the most.
Which is a solid, you know, 2 minutes longer than any of us expected.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and so that's your opportunity. So I think culturally and logistically, rural church is just set up to produce pastors. I mean, we've seen it. You know, at this church, I can't tell you how many people have got their first sermon on our platform, and a lot of them are in ministry now, or at least in training for ministry. And so I just think rural America has it figured out when it comes to producing pastors.
Yeah. Some of our listeners might think back to one of our earlier episodes, and I invite them to check it out with Pastor Kevin Gear. And he, currently runs a rather large church in Montana. I mean, they have definitely hit what we would call a mega church context. And when I interviewed him, he grew up in a small town, and he talks about how he sits there and scratches his head saying, how do I, in my large organization, make as many opportunities as a rural church allowed me? Because he started doing kids ministry when he was 12, you know, he said, oh, I just took over, and he remembers that. And so I love that you echo that, but man, that's great. Let's see what else we got to talk about. Oh, I was excited about this part of your story. You mentioned that your church prides itself, is probably the wrong word. It's not a very Christian virtue, but it's something we get excited about, where it is like developing an effective ministry to men. Because in my experience, what I have found is, number one, I think I have been in a lot of churches, especially a lot of small town churches, where the perception is, hey, the guys are busy doing whatever industry and trade and whatever's going on, and the women are more present. So there might often be a more viable women's ministry in a small town church. Or I've seen kind of this culturally light, like we get together as men and we do the fun activity like hunting or whatever. And it seems to lack discipleship depth. But you guys have said, hey, we've made it a point, we've made it a priority. And so talk to us, what does effective men's ministry look like? How can other rural churches effectively do this?
So I've been thinking about this a little bit. I think our church has been effective in reaching men for a couple of reasons. And the first is we have prioritized connecting with men. And when I say prioritize, I mean there's a deep-rooted conviction in our leadership that's important to reach the men of our generation. And I know that there are a lot of churches that desire to do that. But men are under attack in our culture. And that might not be popular to say right now, but I truly do believe that, particularly in a rural context, that a lot of people feel that way. And so we think about how do we actually reach men? And we take that to the micro level. I mean, we think about the graphics that we produce. We think about the aesthetics of the church. We think about how we're actually resourcing men's ministry. I think when I'm preparing my messages, how's this going to land with men? I'm even picky about some of the worship songs that we sing because I think about it from a visitor who is a man. How is he going to understand this? Because,
As a worship
sometimes,
leader, some people have felt, yeah, it's it, there's there can be feminine concepts. It can be really
correct.
alienating if we don't think about it.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying any of that stuff is wrong. I'm just saying that we're kind of looking at this from the perspective of a man is visiting and he has no reference to church. What's he thinking? So we prioritize and then we schedule and we scale and we build accordingly. Okay. The other thing I think that we do well is that we speak the language of manhood. And when I say that, I'm not talking about we're going to go hunting or, using sports references all the time. That's artificial and that's fake. And frankly, that's cringy when people start doing that.
100%,
So what is the language of manhood? And I would say it really comes down to strength, conviction, and brotherhood. That's the foundation of the language of manhood. I mean, why were people drawn to Jesus's teaching? It's because he taught as one with authority. When he spoke, there was strength behind it. And men just don't respect weakness. You got to speak with conviction. You got to speak the truth and be willing to take a beating for the truth. Why did people listen to Paul? Well, because he spoke the truth and then he got whooped and beat time and time again for speaking what he believed to be true. And at the same time, though, he didn't use the truth as a weapon. And so you got to be careful about that. And then just frankly, brotherhood, we have a culture of men at our church, at least, that are willing to say what the ideal is in Christ. And then they are willing to say how they failed to live up to that. And that vulnerability has created brotherhood for our guys. So I think you got to start with that philosophy. I got to prioritize this. I have to learn to speak the language of manhood. And if I do those things, I really think that's going to help build a foundation. And then we do create the fun moments for the guys, particularly in how we do discipleship. So our primary discipleship tool right now is a cross between a live recorded podcast and a Bible study that we do in our cafe. We have good food at 6:30 on Wednesday nights, and then I come up. We have a podcasting desk. I mean, we made it look good in there. It looks like a cigar lounge. Please don't judge me for that. It
Oh,
just looks
no,
like
it's
a
gonna
place
be
a
a
man would want
Christian
to hang
cigar
out.
lounge,
Yeah,
obviously.
Christian cigar lounge, obviously. It just looks like a place guys would want to come hang out. We got, sports on the TV while we're eating. And then I do a 15-minute, Bible setup. We kind of go expositionally through sections of the Bible. And then I have a panel of peers. There's three other guys with me. And then we discuss the scriptural implications
Oh,
for our
nice.
lives. And so we started doing that at the first of the year, and it's been the best discipleship tool I've seen for men that I've ever been a part of. We've always had a good, healthy men's ministry, but that's just taken it to another level. And the health of our men is very strong. And we've seen a lot of families start coming to our church because the men come first. I mean,
Oh,
they're
wow.
coming before their kids or before their wives. And they're bringing their family with them. And so that's huge to see. And then you have the fun things that go with it. We do
Oh, sure.
gun range days or motorcycle rides or top golf events, but really, I think it's just it starts on Sundays and Wednesdays for us. It's a cultural value as much as anything else.
Sure. And just in case our listeners are curious, we will have your podcast linked in our show notes. We're always good to pass on resources. And if somebody's really interested in saying, hey, how do I engage men? If you're telling me this is your bread and butter, we're going to make sure people know where to find it. And
Well,
so
thank you.
we'll definitely do that. That is no, that's an exciting thought, because I think for me personally, I've always I think you see two pendulums with men's ministry. You either see again that superficial, overhyped kind of we're focusing on masculinity in all the wrong ways. Or you see, because maybe people recognize, oh, that's not effective, there's almost this full pendulum shift to, well, we're not going to do anything. And
We're not going to do it.
I think I loved hearing you say, like, it's expositional, it's biblical, it's strength, it's brotherhood, it's conviction. I mean, I love all those things, man. Let's see. You talk about how people should consider. We're going to kind of let's do this. I think we're going to switch into kind of talking about what mentalities kind of help us when we are in the rural church, right? When we talk about how should we be viewing churches? What's it look like to even consider applying to a rural church or to be part of a rural town or to go even between rural towns sometimes? And so, this first question, you talk about how people should consider whether they would be a good fit to pastor a rural church. How important do you think this quality of fit is for a potential rural pastor? Because I think part of me would say, well, pastor's pastor anywhere. What the heck? You know? And so tell me about why that stands out to
Well, I think that it's important for any pastor to fit, regardless of the
you. Sure.
location role or otherwise,
Yeah.
I mean, because pastoring is a relational contract between you and a congregation, right? There is a relationship involved in order to under shepherd this group of people. And so if you're not connecting with them, you're not fitting with them, then it's just never going to work. So when I was looking for a place to lead pastor, I mean, here's some questions I was asking myself, does this board and does this church speak the same cultural and leadership language as I do?
Sure.
And here's how I explain it to my staff. I say, when you're leading, when you're preaching, when you're teaching, do the people dance to the beat of your music? George Strait can fill a stadium, so can Eminem. Neither of them are going to switch fans, right? Like that when they,
That's
when,
true.
you know what I mean? So, I mean, just because a group of people doesn't resonate with your leadership style or resonate with your ministry style doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong, but it might mean that you don't need to pastor there. And so that was very, very important for me. I also think for me, I was asking the question, am I going to enjoy the lifestyle of this community? And this is really important, especially in rural America, because in rural America, everybody's going to know your business. You're
It's
not
true.
going to go anywhere quickly. We're in a town of 2,400. We have very few businesses. If you go to the grocery store, you are going to run into two or three people that you know. And to get a half a gallon of milk is going to take you 20 minutes. I mean, that's just part of the deal. Are you going to be able to enjoy that? Now, my family enjoys that, so for us, that's a blessing. And then I think a guy just needs to be honest with himself. Do I have a skill set that's going to help facilitate health and growth in this church? And you need to be real with yourself. You need to be really good, I think, in the interview process of investigating, where's this church at? What have they done in the past? Where do they need to go? And does my skill set help facilitate that? And then I think something simple that we don't like to say, but I think it's really important, is when I sit down and I interview with this board and I talk to the congregation, do I like them? I mean, if I had to go on a car ride with them and I was going to be in a car for 10 hours, could I enjoy the trip? Yes or no?
Because
And if you
that's your
say,
future, is what it
yeah, it
really
is your future. Yeah, that really is your future. I mean, you're going to be with these people for a while, so you really need to you kind of need to start developing a love for them, from the beginning. And I think if those things work, then there's a fit, and I think that's really good. But if there's no fit, what's going to be your alternative? You're going to either have to change, which none of us are really good at, or you're going to have to change the church so that they fit with you. And that's not really going to work either. So I really think this concept of fit is really important to try to figure out before you sign the dotted line to go pastor somewhere, because otherwise it's going to be a really tough road for you and the church.
I definitely think of my own story, and I think a lot of people sympathize where you come into a context, urban or rural, whatever, from the outside, and you are confronted with such a different value system, and it just hits hard. And I remember my wife was raised rural. I was not, and I mean, granted, all of Montana kind of rural, okay, if we're being honest, you know, but But I came still from like the biggest place that had 24/7 amenities that was very different pacing. And then I'm in a small town and everything closes at 8 o'clock and the grocery store takes forever. And, all those things. It takes 10 hours to drive anywhere. It's just nuts. And I remember at one point, my wife, we were just dating at the time, but she was also the pastor's daughter. So I had a lot of incentive to just make everything work, but she would look at me and say things like, "Hey, you're here now, and so you got to stop talking about where you came from. It's just not important. Either love where you're at or don't, And we had a
That's
lot of these
good.
conversations. And so
That's good.
it's so encouraging to hear that because, again, like obviously obedience is obedience. We believe that if God calls you to a place, he'll equip you for it. But you should at least go in with that awareness because, again, man, it is. I've seen it happen. Like, for every story where I'm like, "Oh, I grew to love the rural church," there are people and congregations who are hurting because they just never found fit. And so, man, thanks for bringing that to the table today. Let's look at our next conversation piece here. And you already touched on it a little bit, but you specifically mentioned, starting with the board, the church, the community, and saying, "Hey, do I actually gel with all three of these areas?" And specifically, what I thought was interesting is I think most of us would do that in reverse order. I think if I moved to a town, I would say, "Do I like this town?" And then I would say, "Do I like the church?" And then I would start looking at the board, because I think in my brain, that's the level of importance I would put on each. But I was really intrigued because you said, "No, I look at the board, I look at the church, and then I look at the town." And so why did you prioritize these the way you do? What lesson is there to teach us there?
I just gotta have my disclaimer right here that this could
I'm
be the worst
excited.
advice that has ever been shared, but
Yes, I
this is
love that.
my
We are
opinion.
sharing
It's just my opinion, okay?
controversial
Yeah, this is just
advice.
my
Got it.
opinion, okay? And I have very limited experience. You're getting what you pay
Sure,
for, okay?
I love it.
In the rural church, the board is most often the gatekeepers for the church, okay?
True, true.
And frankly, if you start looking at small churches and rural context, the board has probably put a lot of blood, a lot of sweat, and a lot of tears to invest into that church. And so maybe they have a little bit of a protector mindset towards the church, but who can blame them? I mean,
Right.
we would as well if we grew up here and we have spent our life trying to help build this. When I came here, the what I would consider the lead deacon, he literally was in his mama's womb when he before he was born in this church. And then he's 18, 19 years old, and he's put on the board, and he was on the board until approximately 2 years ago.
Dang.
The most sweet, passionate man you'll ever meet just has this conviction for the kingdom, loves the church, has given blood, sweat, and tears for this place. Was my and my wife's biggest advocate. In fact, they had to move to Florida. Long story there. My family went and visited them. That's how close we are to them. I
Dang.
mean, love this guy, right? But he went through, I think, approximately 9 or 10 pastors as a
Sure.
deacon. Okay, so I mean, all of us come in and we say, "Man, God's called me to pastor. God's called me to shepherd these people, and I want to lead." And that's good. But there's people that have been here for a long time that have paid a high price to be here. And so, in my opinion, you can only start leading where permission is given to actually lead. And so,
Yeah.
if a pastor and a board cannot work together, then where are you going to find leadership credibility out of the gate? Because if you can't work at the with the board, you're going to end up in a very rough end game. If you are in a deadlock with the board, what are you going to do? How are you going to lead the church? Ultimately, one of three things is going to either happen. You're going to stay in the deadlock, or you're going to have to try to get some board members out of the boardroom, or third option, they're going to get you out of the boardroom, and that's not good.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just a no-brainer that when I'm looking for the church, I have to evaluate this board. Can I work with them first and foremost? Because if the answer is yes, they are probably a representation of the church. And if the board and the pastor are united, the church will get in line with that
I
leadership. I
love
mean,
that.
I've never heard in my limited experience where a church, excuse me, a pastor and a board were in just tight harmony and unity, and the church turned on the leadership. That's just normally
Yeah.
not how that works,
Yeah,
So
that's fair.
if the pastor and the board are in harmony, then the pastor, the board, and the church are going to be in harmony. And now you have an organization that can make a positive impact in the community
Sure.
with the gospel. But if I come in just looking at the community, am I going to enjoy living here? Do I like this opportunity at the church? But I don't actually look at the leadership. I think I'm really setting myself up for failure. That's my opinion. Probably terrible advice, but that's how
Oh
I
no,
viewed it.
it's I think it's really smart because you think about it, like all of us, I think, have been able to endure rough circumstances due to the people we're
Yes.
enduring them with. And so
Oh,
even if
100%.
you said, hey, I'm not a huge fan of the town I'm in, if your church board, if your church themselves are good and you're tight there, you have a good relationship, well, that relationship will carry you. Whereas like just the love for a town cannot always carry you through leadership conflict. And I also, man, I really think it's good advice. I mean, if the two of us are setting the standard here, I think we got it, Austin. Like that's some good stuff. Cause I also think about how often, like in a larger place, there is potential at least for boards to change with greater frequency. But in a small town, you're probably going to have the same kind of general pool. It's usually a small pool. And even if they're not on the board, there's definitely these key influencers who are doing the stuff. And so, man, that's yeah, I think we've decided it's good advice. It's solid advice.
Well, and to add to that, I mean, in rural America, a lot of times everybody's related to each other
That's
in
true
one
too,
form or
yeah.
fashion. You know what I mean? Talking about my lead deacon, Bruce, he jokes with me. He's like, you can never talk bad about anybody because I'm related to everybody. And there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, these people went to school together. They grew up together, you know. I mean, so there's deep roots there in rural America. So if you start getting into a war with people, I just don't know how you're ever going to overcome that. It just seems unwise to me. And then frankly, if you don't like certain aspects of the town, you know, let's say for example, this is a problem in rural America. The school needs some work. Man, I just don't want to, you know, put my kids in this community because the school needs work. Well, your church can fix that. That's something that you can fix. You know what I
You can
mean? Put that
impact
on
the
a serve
community.
week part. Put that on a serve week project. You know, go paint some
There you go.
classrooms or something, you know. So, to me, that order makes sense, and that's how I mean, it worked for me here. I think the same thing's true for staff. I think you need to pick the church by the pastor first, the people second, community third. You know, if you want to go youth pastor, kids pastor, or whatever, and you don't believe in the pastor or the vision of the pastor, I don't think you have any business going and serving at that church. That's my opinion.
No, that's huge. Cool. Well, we got just a couple questions left here. This one, you said a quote that I just loved, and I don't know if it'll take long to explain, but I think it's powerful regardless. You said, just because you're in a small town doesn't mean you have to do small things. And obviously, our whole podcast DNA is about this kind of concept, but I'd love to hear it in your own words. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think one of the negatives about rural America is that there is a lot of poverty in rural America a lot of times. I mean, there is here in Jay. I think that's not unique for us. And as a result, there can be poverty mindset with some people. And what that turns into is a small church mindset. We can never do what that church over there is doing because we don't have the same resources that they have. They're in a big city, lots of money, et cetera. But here's what I believe. I believe in rural America, you're not going to be able to do everything. But you can do some things really, really good. So if you pray and determine what God has called you to do, you can own that piece of ground in your community and you can do big kingdom things in your community. Now, your worship team might not be the next elevation, but you can have a premier, you know, after school program, you know, for your community, which is often a huge need in rural America. We've seen God do amazing things in our small church just because they believe in doing things with excellence because God has called them to do it. And we have never allowed resources to limit us in that area. You know, at the end of the day, we're Pentecostals, and I think our conviction should be that all God needs to grow his kingdom is a spirit-filled believer with a Bible. And everything else is just icing on the cake after that.
He'll figure it
And
out.
so he'll figure it out. So that's just been my conviction, and that's been
Man,
our experience here.
I love that. Well, this last one is just a more of a personal thing of mine. I tend to love just the varieties of way in which we learn and grow in both our faith and ministry. And so you mentioned that you do love to read. You know, I think a lot of good leaders are good readers. I think that's a silly proverb, but it's a real one where I
Yeah,
think when
that's
people
real.
learn, they tend to excel. And so what's a book that's impacted you? And what is that impact? You know, what's a book that you like, and what's it spoken to you?
Man, when you sent this question to me, I actually got several. Okay, so I'm gonna go through
I'm
this quick,
excited.
and
I knew this was going
you
to
can edit
happen. I was
this
like,
out.
he's going to
Yeah,
get
you
like
can edit this
four.
out.
Okay.
Okay, and then I decided I'm gonna go with things that are probably not on the forefront of what you
I love
hear most
that
people talk about.
because
Okay,
honestly, of course,
yeah.
we've all read like a couple of the same books. But yeah, tell
Yes,
me about yours. I
okay.
love it.
So one that helps me with communication a lot is this book called Cues by Vanessa Van Edwards. There's a lot of books on body language, but most of them about perceiving what other people are saying through their body language. This is about projection And so there was just some
Dang.
good, there was some good nuggets in there. And that one, I love that one. Another one that is probably my favorite book. If my office is burning down, this is a book I'm going to grab. It's The Traveler's Gift by Andy
Okay.
Andrews. Okay. This was a very popular book back in the 90s. I've never heard anybody talk
Okay.
about it since. Andy
Okay.
Andrews was homeless living underneath a bridge, got a library card, read 300 books in like 2 years, biographies, and noticed seven trends of people's lives. And he said, if I apply this to my life, can I be successful too? And it's an allegory about a man that makes seven decisions. It's probably my favorite book.
Wow, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, I think another book, as far as talking about doing things with excellence, Excellence Wins by Horst Schulze. He's the guy who founded the Ritz-Carlton. This is
Oh,
a little
cool.
bit more of a popular book, but
Sure,
just
yeah, I
great
think I
stuff
have heard
on.
of that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Another one. This is an old book, but Knowing God by J.F. Packer.
Oh,
Super
yes,
good.
yeah.
Have you read this one?
I have it on my shelf. I don't know if I read it yet.
Okay, you need to read that one. That one's really good. Reading While Black. Okay,
Yo.
this is a really good one by Esau Macaulay. And so just with the racial tensions in the country, this guy
Yeah.
does a great job on the theology of what racial unity. I think he's very balanced. I thought that was a great book
Yeah.
there. And then a couple of reference books I think a guy should have is Systematic Theology by Wayne Grudem. If you're a
Okay.
preacher, you got to have this book on your
Yeah,
shelf
it's solid
because
stuff.
yeah, it's all stuff. And then The Doctrines of the Christian Life by John Frame. Okay, this
Dang.
is really good
Our
as
listeners
well.
are not going to see you hold up these books, but these
Yeah.
last two we might say were thicker than the rest. Okay. Like
Yes, they
those
were.
are
Yeah, I mean
solid tomes. Okay.
they are yeah, it was an endurance contest to get through those two, but I think the value of having them on your shelf, you wouldn't have to read them cover to cover. I think the value of having them on your shelf is worth the cost because they're just some
Yeah.
great resources. So those are a few that I pulled
Man,
aside that, yeah.
I trust your picks mostly because you couldn't pick. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know that you
Yeah.
truly like, you're like, I'm into it because I got like eight that I really like. And I was like,
Yeah,
I
yeah.
said one. And you're like, what about eight?
Yeah, what about
That's
eight? Yeah. So
awesome. No,
anyways,
that's
take
great.
it,
I'm going to
take them for
pick
what
up
it's worth.
some of those. That one on cues sounds really fun. I feel like my youth pastor told me a while ago when I was still learning ministry, he said, ministry is really just about 5% knowing your Bible and about 95% trying to know people, you know, and obviously like not diminishing the role of the Bible, but just saying like, hey, you gotta understand people and like what you're doing, what they're doing. And so I'm pumped for that. But man, this has been a fun conversation. Pastor Austin, I just want to say thanks for being on the podcast today, sir.
Well, thank you very much. It was an honor to get to do it, and I've really enjoyed it.
Well, good. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, I just want to say again that it is our goal every single week that you be encouraged and inspired and challenged. We want you to hear from people who are not just talking to what you're going through, but have been there, who are living it in real time. And so we hope that you are walking away from this conversation just pumped up. I know I am. As always, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcast or ruraladvancement.com. Please feel free to leave a review or a rating or anything like that. But true to rural form, I think the best way for this podcast to spread is how we all figured it would anyways, is by one rural pastor saying to another rural pastor, hey, there's a set of conversations you got to hear. And so we hope that you share that. We hope that you're blessed. I have been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Austin Epperson, and we will see you next week.